keep all that corporate BS. I'm into punk.
This aggression will not stand, man.
Such primitive technology. I wonder if the people on this planet will ever discover the superior sound of vinyl.
Remember this? It's a turntable. Used to play LPs.
What? Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
Black Vinyl Collective.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Black Vinyl Collective podcast. Me, Seth Werkheiser. Travis is here as well. Say hello.
Hello.
And our guest in this episode is Marcus Johansson. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, gentlemen.
Marcus, we know each other from the Twitterverse back in the day.
This is true.
And we've been conversing over the years, I guess. Odd that it's years already.
It is years now already. That's crazy.
Yeah. And so yeah, I mean, and I think pretty much from when we first started speaking, we were talking about Silencer back in the day, many moons ago.
Yeah, about 2012 is when that album finally saw the light of day, and that was also the year I was interacting with you on Twitter with the metal trivia, which has been, you know, I always felt like that's kind of something that gets lost a little bit in the common era here, where you don't have the magazines, you don't have the CDs, you don't have the liner notes, so you can't really nerd out as hard over everything. So, like, you know, the metal trivia is a classic kind of thing for me that I've always been like, hey, you know, that guy played on this album with that guy, and then this. So, like, that's, it was like right up my alley. I was like, ooh, metal trivia.
Yeah,
Twitter made it. It made Twitter worth it for me at the time, and I'm still on there now. So I'm going to attribute that to you.
Right? No, thank you. I appreciate that.
I feel like metal is the best genre for trivia too. Like just in before we hit record here, we were just talking for about, I think Skype said 12 minutes or something. I think three things came up where I was like, really? I had no idea that SOD sold that many albums, and I had no idea that I forget what the other one was. You guys brought up Bruce Dickinson. I didn't even know that. I had no idea about
that. Only came out. Yeah, that only came out earlier today. So
it's still trivia.
And definitely too back then, Marcus. You'll remember this. I was doing like three questions a day, and
yes.
And usually like every day I was doing a moment of metal where I played like a 3-second snippet of a song.
Oh yeah,
a solo. Yeah,
metal name that tune.
Yeah, and like you got all of them all the time. It was awesome. It was just like four notes of a guitar solo, and you're like Marty Friedman or whatever. Like, like you knew the guitarist. Like, and
that's
the song.
Probably a safe bet. If it was Marty, it was probably sure. Just like in a, you know, drunk on a bender, be like, "That's Marty. That's Lucretia." You know, like waking up in the morning, like. Like, I can name that tune in half a phrase.
Sure. But no, it definitely a lot of this came together in that way. No,
that's positive, too, because, you know, it's a very, internet's very kind of, you know, breeding ground for negativity. So to kind of, like, have brought people together over a common kind of old school meets new school vibe of, you know.
I couldn't agree more. And I think one of the things that I always hear, when I hear you talking, not talking, when I see you tweeting about certain things and you're like, this person is negative, this person is crashing on this, this person is smashing this, and Seth does the same thing, I always think to myself, like, maybe everyone's just following the wrong people, because I think everybody that I follow on Twitter is rad. Like, we all hang out online all the time.
Yeah.
And you know, people follow 24,300 people so they can have 24,300, you know what I mean? And you're just opening yourself up to just the most negative crap. Be more selective and follow people who are cool. I don't know, just throwing that out there, you know?
Yeah, it's nutty out there. Oh, the Twitterverse. Especially with all the changes from Facebook. You got so many more people like, oh, let me try out Twitter. And it just becomes a shit show of, like, of negativity. Like, ah, this is stupid, blah, blah, blah. Like, ugh. No, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you can't help it. It kind of makes its way to you.
It does.
Sometimes. I mean, that's a... especially, you know, I wish there was more of a... I try to keep a pretty low profile as it is because I really don't think I do much of anything anyway. So I'm always trying to stay kind of... I guess I look at it like, I'll say it. Fuck it, I'll say it because who really... Who's gonna, like, who am I gonna offend that's like so connected in the world that it's gonna somehow come back and get me? But you know, like Facebook, even sometimes on Twitter, you can go down. It's not even so much who you follow, but you can kind of go down the rabbit hole. Like you'll click on someone's tweet, start reading through the replies, and just instantly question your life and why you know you even want to use a computer anymore. and exactly. It can really be like, you know, and I guess part of that too is, you know, kind of like a hunger for awareness, and you know, you're always trying to see what people are, you know, sometimes you know, I mean, that's the same way that sometimes you can stumble upon the trivia account, you know, you can get up the Skull Toaster, you see someone's talking to somebody, you know, click the profile, who they are, what they're all about, and
yep,
you know, I mean, it's kind of that the duality of. Yeah, it's the negativity is kind of just like a built-in thing. Like you can try to avoid it as much as you can, but even sometimes, like
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just kind of a consequence of trying to navigate through it all. But
sure, I mean, having the conversations, you know, when you kind of, I'm saying this really loosely, when you kind of get to know someone through Twitter or Facebook, and you kind of decide, okay, this person's worth talking to, then yeah, definitely you can. Be a little bit more control of how much crap you have to take in. But when you make an album, like when you put the Silencer album out there, it's out there. And yeah. You know, I especially like you talk about low profile, you might personally try to keep a low profile, but looking at the lineup on this record, dude, like, come on, man, this isn't low profile at all. This is this looks like a fantasy baseball draft of metal or something. This
why,
is insane.
Why are you gonna bust me out like that, huh? Why? Why'd you gotta call me out? Gosh, shit.
It's on Wikipedia, man. It's all fair game. I'm sorry. It's out there.
The X-Files theme just kicks in. The
truth is out there. It is out there, and it's all on Wikipedia. I'm pretty sure that's all pretty reliable.
But that's what you're, you know, but, to kind of talk about what you just, the phrasing you just said, fantasy, it's like a fantasy team. And yes, that's basically what people have always asked. Like, I've always laughed at the question when people ask, like, well, why did you do this? As if nobody else would have ever in their wildest dreams or fantasies been like, you know what, wouldn't it be great to make an album and have all these people that you grew up listening to that were your influences and your heroes?
Hell
and
yeah.
People, you know, like, and you're just going down the list and then you're like, who at the end of that statement would be like, nah.
No, thanks.
It's like, yeah. So I guess, I don't know, did I jump the shark? Did I go like straight to sellout mode by doing that?
No, if anything, you're in that unique position that when someone says, why would you do this, you can just flip it on them and say, why haven't you?
Well, yeah, that's don't ask people questions. That's not good.
Yeah, come on. That's a lot of work.
Don't make people think and you know, because that's, you know, again, I've never heard like a really great response to that question, like, oh, you know, like, well, why haven't you done it? You know, people I mean, with all the energy that people talk about and, you know, with trashing things on the internet, like, that takes energy, that takes time. Like, there's that dude that's trolling that hard, I have a hard time believing he's jet-setting around it, and those are just, like, random comment bombs that he's leaving in the middle of, like, the greatest parties and the most luxurious and, like, exotic locations. Like, I just don't see that. I see comic book guys sitting there going, worst episode ever, and that's all I see. And
that is an,
you know,
excellent point. You're right.
And really, it you know, and again, like, the something like that, music becomes kind of secondary to the people are fixate. Like, people find little things to just, you know, they talk about the lineup, don't really, but without talking, it's amazing. You can talk about the lineup without actually talking about the album. You can, the album's almost kind of like tucked underneath it, and,
right.
You know, it can get kind of interesting sometimes.
That's a shame that people are that short-sighted, because just asking me, why would you do something like that? Having an opportunity to play, I would love that. That would be amazing to just go around and I handpick that guy, and I always dug the way he played guitar, and I don't think that would match up with the way that guy plays bass, but there's only one way to find out, you know? Let's stick him on a track together and see what happens. It really looks like, my God, this album must have been fun. This had to have been a blast to pull together.
It was. I mean, it really, as the politics of trying to release it, and, you know, and then once something does finally see the light of day, it can, you know, it stings. It can sting a little bit when something that you, and I think that's, you know, it, being artistic, being an artist, being anybody that's in that kind of creative realm, it's taking a risk to put your own work on display, because you're usually, you know, I would think most people put there's a reason why they're doing something. It's not necessarily like doing it on purpose. Like, sure, everything is selective. Like, there's still that kind of, like, if you're putting your emotion into it, you know, conveying your feelings in an abstract kind of way, you know, trying to process yourself, and, you know, as you're living life and going through all these things, that's, you know, and then you see somebody just 5 seconds after it's released be like, you know, hey, fuck you, that sucks. You're just kind of like, all right, like, good, that was good. I hope feel better. Like, okay, all right.
Or, thank you, internet.
Mm-hmm, one of my personal favorites that I saw, and if this guy is listening, I'll laugh my ass off. I wouldn't even know who it was, but someone was like, the vocals on this album suck. They should have gotten Rob Halford. I was just kind of like, whoa, all right, like, that's, I'm sure that would have gone even better for me, you know, like, hey, they got Halford too, what the hell is this, like, this isn't Priest, right? Then it would have been something like, we would have been ruining, yep, his leg, like, it would have always been something, so you can't really start to take, you know, keep score with what the third parties have to say. Yeah, you got to kind of keep to it.
Nothing is good enough for folks on the sidelines at all, ever.
Yep.
That's kind of...
It's a shame, too.
Yeah.
And but yes, it was fun, to answer your question, Travis. It was fun. It led to some phenomenal things and, you know, lots of great stories and, you know, things that I always have with me that are even supplemental to the album, so it's kind of a, you know, it was like a life experience, not just kind of like cutting a record.
Sure, yeah, okay, cool. Let's take a little break and play one of the songs. Are we allowed to do that? Do you own the rights to this?
Oh wow, what a question! Like, the short answer is yes, but the second is like, does anyone even? Who's gonna care? Like, who's gonna check this out? Like, who is coming to my rescue? Like, I'd love to have someone, like, that would be the typical thing. You guys would get sued somehow for playing something that I own, that I'm giving you, that you didn't download, that I sent you. You know, I'm just it's bound to happen. I look forward to getting the summons in the mail.
That'll be fun. Yeah,
it'll be a groundbreaking case that will just confuse legal procedures for the rest of eternity when it comes to podcasts. But
I love it. Cool.
I wanted to, being a drummer and one of those YouTube drumming nerds that watches videos and stuff, I actually went to a Marco Miniman clinic many, many moons ago, and I got to sit from here to him while he played, and just, I mean, it was like watching, it's like watching a college algebra professor or something. I was just like, what is happening? How is he doing that? So I wanted to hear that track. So we're going to play Wired in the Blood with Marco Miniman on drums. And when we come back in, you can tell us a little bit about some of the other songs on here.
Killer.
So, cool.
Here we go. Wired in the Blood by Silencer. All right, then. That was Wired in the Blood from Marcus's album Silencer. And I wanted to go through, not everybody, obviously, because I don't think everybody needs to hear all the details of everybody you had on here. But you have to look this album up, everybody who's listening. Because if you know anybody from metal at all,
from any metal band ever in the history of anything.
Well, kind of. I mean, it sounds like, you know, it sounds like I'm trying to be pompous, but seriously, like I the 6 degrees of metal band thing. Everybody has. This is amazing. Like, I short of reading down. I mean, you know, Andy LaRocque, really? Marco Miniman, Sean Reinert from Cynic, Gene Hoagland, Brendan Small. The Heathen, Jordan Rudess, Rob, unpronounceable last name, the dude from Anthrax. How do you say that?
Caggiano, and he's actually in Volbeat now.
Right, right. Yeah. This is Steve DiGiorgio. Oh my god, dude! Like, how on earth did you pull this off? I mean, I know, like I said, you don't have to go through everybody, but I mean, how does a guy from Chicago who plays guitar go, you know what, I'm going to make an album with everybody who I've ever liked and actually pull it off? Like, just kind of nutshell that for somebody that, instead of sitting here and bashing you and saying, well, why would you do that? find this as inspiration, as to reach, you know, if you play something and you want to play with somebody who you dig, reach out to them and ask. Marcus did, you know?
I mean, there's definitely, you know, what harm could really come from asking? One of the other little tidbits is it probably helps to, you know, be able to dabble a little bit. You know, these guys still, you know, like to have their time respected. And, you know, I guarantee I'm not the only person that's asked any of these guys to do something similar. And a lot of these guys have probably done, like my buddy Kevin Talley, who did the drums for the majority of the record. And that's what's funny is, like, when, you know, Kevin Talley and Larry Tarnowski were the first two guys to round out the album, Larry doing the second set of lead guitar. Larry was in Iced Earth, through one of my favorite periods of Iced Earth, the Barlow years, Something Wicked This Way Comes, Horror Show, which had Steve DiGiorgio on bass, and, you know, there's Steve again. So, like, that right away, there you go with the degrees of separation, it's there. But yeah, like, Kevin's been on probably thousands of songs that have never been released.
Right.
You know, super in demand dude, killer drummer, Dying Fetus, you know, his Slayer audition is still online on YouTube in some places, I think. Before Lombardo came back into the fold.
Right.
And you know, so he's a phenomenal drummer, and everyone wants to talk about Hoagland, Reinert, and Miniman, and it's just kind of a crazy thing. But so Kevin and Larry were the first two. Recording studio we were working at had Hoagland kind of crash into it one day. He was in town for a little while in Chicago. Studio owner asked if we had ever heard of him, and I laughed. and was just kind of like, are you, in my head, I was like, if you're asking, you have to be talking about somebody else. There's got to be, like, you know, Gino Hoagland or something that's from down the street.
The jazz great. Yeah.
Right. You know, right.
So, you know, we were able to get him to, make another appearance in the studio, play him the album, talk to him a little bit, said we thought it would be fun to do a cover, and after having him agree, we recorded, we jammed songs together as well as cutting the track. So, I mean, there's the experiences I was talking about where, you know, playing Holy Wars with Gene Hoagland, Cowboys from Hell with Gene Hoagland, Hot for Teacher with Gene Hoagland, and, you know, people are like, why aren't you busy playing out every weekend? I'm like, I don't know, the desire is just kind of not there after an experience like that, where you're just kind of like, that still doesn't seem real all of these years later. And you know, you talk about the lineup, and Gene led into Brendan, and then, you know, picking up Brendan Small to do the solo on that track just was what inspired it to kind of be like, all right, well, we picked a few dudes up. I wonder if anybody else would be gracious enough to agree. And then within a few months, then it was Andy LaRocque, Roland Graphaw from Helloween and Masterplan, Michelangelo Badio. And then it just kind of kept going and became like a halfway through the list of people. It wasn't so much a chore, because when you could reach out to someone and say, hey, I'd really like you to be a part of this, they actually felt like they wanted to be a part of it, because they saw, like, they saw old friends, or they saw people that they knew of, at least, and thought that it was kind of a novel concept. It was I still to this day kind of see things like this try to manifest themselves, and rarely does it ever seem to get off the ground. The only thing close that I'm aware of would be like a Roadrunner United, and you know, that's a major record label. So, I mean, of course, sure, they were able to really make that happen. And this took a, we started recording it in 2006 and it didn't get released until 2012. So, I mean, like the math on that, like it wasn't like I landed everybody in like a 6 month period, got everyone to like, we accommodated schedules, because if you don't have a real, you know, when you're doing it yourself, you don't answer to anybody. You don't have to be on a schedule. You don't need to have it done by next week, next month, not even next year. And it was just kind of like, why rush something that you could continually try to, you know, develop into something that, again, still seems kind of surreal to me, to this day, that you know, that people are aware of it, or that people dug it, or at least intrigued by it. And then, you know, sometimes I just kind of take a look at it and go like, oh wow, that was that was quite the ride to put all that together. And it was an amazing experience. All the guys were really just great to work with. And yeah, I mean, again, I just use the internet instead of leaving all the angry comments for people. I just sought people out, you know, right, via their own personal websites or MySpace, Facebook. I don't know if I got anybody off of Twitter. I don't know. LinkedIn got one.
Wow.
and I won't tell you who, but I use LinkedIn for business twice in my life, and that's probably two more times than I'll ever do it again. So no, I think the older I get, it'll become even more special, as weird as that is to say.
That's cool. That's kind of cool, because I didn't realize it took 6 years, and you had Gene Hoagland for how many days?
In the studio?
Yeah, like what was your availability to Gene?
Well,
like a day?
Gene was in town for a month, I believe.
Right.
And so he was fairly regularly available over that period. It was definitely just then like, okay, let's pick the song, learn the song. We went in and everything got done in a day. I mean, it was one song. It was, you know, Gene. We did a pile of takes, not even as many as you probably, you know, it was just more fun. We just kept jamming through it.
Sure.
Each time you get a little bit more the fluid, the gel going, where everybody, you're really vibing well, and then played a few back, and you know, Gene was like, that one works, and you know, that was, you know, just kind of it. Like I said, it was a very relaxed kind of atmosphere. It was just picking one that he liked, because to the average listener, I'm going to go out and on a limb and just say that they're all going to be like 99%. Like, you won't really tell much of a difference, but you know, when he's telling you that he's got the one that he has in mind, you're like, all right, that's the one. So,
sure.
It was definitely a good, that was a wild day. And
that's just neat that it was a 6 year period, and then you had something like that for a day, you know, out of 6 years, and you had this person available in 2006, and then that was it. You haven't seen him again, or you haven't played with him again since then. You had other stuff wrapping up years later, all on the same album. I think that's kind of a neat story. That's kind of a, how much of a sliding scale it was. It's pretty cool that it took long to build, you know?
And, you know, I mean, it's
an, and you still got it done. You still got it done quicker than Tool, I think.
Yeah. The one that we heard a lot was Chinese Democracy. People seem to think that was funny on like a daily basis. Same person, same thing. Like, you know, hey, is it Chinese? You done with Chinese Democracy yet? And then when it finally came out, then there was kind of a weird silence that you're kind of like, what's that? Yeah. Huh?
Yeah.
Still chirping? Huh? I don't hear you. It's done. And I won't say who it was, but there was someone from a fairly established band, and that's why I can't say who it was, that I received a message from once accusing me of all of it not being true.
Wow.
Someone messaged me and was like, I haven't heard of this, so this you must just be making this up. And, you know, I guess for his sake, I won't reveal who that was, but
sure.
it kind of gives an insight into some of the, I should have replied and been like, dude, you can be on it if you want. You don't have to be like that. <You know? laughs> But, so that was, something we kind of dealt with a little bit too. I mean, and that was another reason, you know, if it's taking that long, and, you know, funding wasn't just like falling from the sky, and we weren't in the studio every day. Definitely not every day. I mean, over a 6-year period, maybe 6 months if you're lucky. Like,
yeah.
So, I mean, like, it wasn't such a regularly, like, active, like, oh, we kept recutting songs and doing all this stuff. No, it was a very kind of just, it happened because it was happening, and, you know, why?
Yeah, it's not exactly an EP either. It's 16 songs long. It's 75 minutes. That's a haul, dude. That's going to take a long time to line up who you did. And my God, that's kind of amazing.
I'm glad you're pointing out the length, because circling back to the point that I managed to skip over myself was that how do you keep interest, and as the times is going on, then you're just like, all right, well, we'll keep talking to people, and different schedules kept working out, and sometimes with somebody like Jordan Rudess was like, yeah, I'll do it, but I'm busy right now, and it's because I think they were on tour at Maiden, so busy right now, just a little bit.
Yeah. You know? Something on the schedule, yeah.
Other band as well.
Yeah. His band, you know, whatever, was playing with another band on, you know, tour or whatever. I guess if you're into that sort of thing.
Music types, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. All those Berkeley dudes.
Dream Police or something, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you just kind of kept trucking through it. And in this industry, it's very easy for people to kind of scrap projects, shelve projects, just things just don't see the light of day. And it's the climate too. It's not very encouraging to persist. Like, you definitely have to have, like, I always kind of laugh when someone kind of approaches and acts like, hey, I'm just going to start a band because, like, there's nothing to it. And you're just kind of like, oh, sure. Well, just, you know, right after you get off American Idol, then just rock that and everything will be okay. Like, it won't, there's no planning. There's no, you know, it'll be fine. You'll be counting your millions tomorrow.
Easily. I mean, if it takes that long, I don't know why it took them all the way to the next day, right?
Overnight sensations everywhere.
Yeah.
At the risk of sounding like a complete morning zoo question, hey Marcus, out of everybody on here, who's the one person that you're still kind of forehead slapping? Like, I can't believe I pulled that off. I can't believe I got that dude on there.
There was that pretty much happened every time.
I mean, that's a fair answer.
Absolutely.
If we're going to be honest, you know, I will say that it had nothing to do with, because like some of the guys towards the end of it, that was when it was, you know, Jordan Rudess, Marco Miniman, like, and it wasn't that you were any less excited. Like, the initial moment that you're talking to them and that they agree to do it, you're just kind of out, you know, out of body, just trying to take it all in, and sure. Then life still has a way of kind of reminding you not to get too excited about anything. But
yes,
I mean, like I said, I was excited when it was Larry Tarnowski and Kevin Talley. I was beside myself just with that. I thought was going to be enough for me. Like, I never would have thought when you're telling me like, oh yeah, you know, Larry confirmed we can get him in here and he'll do it. He'll learn the tracks. You know, Kevin's going to be in town. We got Kevin off of the road. He just had done, he was touring with the Red Chord on a Black Dahlia tour, which he ended up doing double duty. So he was playing Red Chord and then he did some Black Dahlia shows because someone got caught up at customs or something, I think it might have been. And then right after that tour, he went and he was doing Hate Eternal.
Wow.
You're going to be kidding me.
So he did Hate Eternal, and I think that was Hate Eternal, Chimera, Arch Enemy, I think was something along those lines for that tour. So he did back-to-back tours like that, pretty much went home, dropped off all of his shit, hopped a flight, and then we had a kit waiting for him at the studio and everything. And I mean, his, I mean, when you listen to the Silencer stuff, there's definitely a lot of double kick going on there. And it's some pretty, even for it not being like a death metal, extreme metal type of project,
it's
definitely a metal workout, because his chops were just there. I mean, Hate Eternal was his last, was like the week before. So, I mean, he was up for doing anything, really. And it, you know, it worked out really well. It took everything up a notch. And, you know, it takes you to the next level, and you start playing with these people, and you want to play better. And I always tell people you should want to be like the worst guy in your band.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, you know, never want, like, anytime anyone's always got that kind of like, I have to be the best. And therein kind of lies the attitude of, could anyone just decide to do this? And it's just like, well, if you're a guitar player and you think that you're the hottest shit around, you know, are you going to be okay with someone better than you like coming in and playing something unbelievable on your own stuff? Right. Like, there's kind of got to be a disconnect there. Like, if there's that ego, and there's a lot of ego in the, you know, music industry, even all the way down to just, you know, dudes in high school that are still trying to play in bands and stuff. Everyone's got that kind of top dog mentality. Everyone's, and really it is, you know, sort of comes from the right place. You know, the band, you have to be a band that's better than another band to get more attention, more likes, and all that kind of stuff. So it just kind of creates the monster a little bit. But no, all of these dudes, jamming with Hoagland, that's always going to be up there. I was super thrilled with Jordan Rudis, Marco. That was after Marco did the Dream Theater audition, so I was even more beside myself with what he was doing. And I mean, Sean Reiner, I've been listening to Human for longer than I can remember. That you know, classic album that kind of just, didn't he pretty much establish death metal drumming with that one? Is that kind of like the unspoken thing there?
In my opinion, what was the album right before that with James Murphy was Spiritual Healing, right?
Spiritual Healing, yeah. More metal trivia, everyone.
There was a definite line in the sand between those two albums. I think Human was kind of like the jaw drop, you know. My old band covered Lack of Comprehension, and we used to have people come up and just compliment us for, oh my god, you play that guy. We have to. It's like a bar band playing name a famous George Thorogood song. It's almost like a standard when you get into this progressive technical metal and the things is like, well you've heard that, right? You know what I mean? It's an amazing song. And I think they kind of established death metal, the term, I think, kind of happened as of Human. I don't think people were referring to it as death metal for the first three albums, but I don't quite remember.
I think Sean was like 18, no more than 20. I don't want to say he was any older than 20, but like that's another interesting kind of thing that I've been kind of talking about more with people in music conversations, and when things get kind of thrown around with how much judgment and how easy it is to just kind of pass, you know, everyone wants to sit there and talk about how much they can't stand. Okay, here it comes. They can't stand Metallica now for any X, Y, and Z reasons. And Saint Anger is like the punching bag. And then you get Lulu in there to just really round it out for everybody, which might have been the greatest troll ever. You never even know what they're thinking. But Kill 'Em All, Ride, Puppets, Justice, before you're 30. Did you do it? Then stop talking. You know, like, holy shit, not even 30 yet. Like, the amount of groundbreaking shit done by four dudes.
Yeah.
When you really look at that in perspective and you start looking at what, you know, the internet kind of brought everyone to the same level, I guess, as far as the human side of the rock star. It showed that everybody, you can interact with people and you kind of lose a little luster when you start meeting more people and they seem larger than life. Maybe it doesn't work out. You had a bad encounter. The dude had a bad night. They had a bad show. Something went wrong. Anything like that. But you know, before, you used to just, if music was a little bit more, I guess, objective, is that the right word, that you just listen to it, you just kind of listen to it, and it just, you just responded to it, how it made you feel. Did the music, did
You know, did it make you happy? Did it make you sad? Did it make you want to break shit?
Right.
Did you relate to it somehow? It wasn't so much like you're listening to everything like you're on the panel. You know, and I love everyone. Yeah. Like, oh, Simon Cowell, what an asshole that guy is. It's like, but that's just like a comment thread come to life.
Yep.
Like, yeah, really. So much. Yeah, that's a good point. And you said like groundbreaking stuff before you're 30, and you listed those four albums, and then Saint Anger became a punching bag and everything. If they would have just kept doing Master of Puppets 2, Master of Puppets 3, Master of Puppets 4, and all those rhythm guitar riffs were still crushing and it still had that kind of thrash beat to it, and then people would be shitting on them for that. Oh, they never change up their style. So there's no, like Seth said, there's no pleasing the armchair quarterback. It's what I hate about it is just, God forbid, like you said, I think the reason why Sean Reiner is one of my most influential drummers is because he did Aeon Spoke and because he did Portal and Cynic and Death. But the fact that he doesn't just, you know, and do all that like techie jazz metal stuff, the fact that he can do what he does, the fact that he produces television show music and stuff, and that's a rounded musician, and you have to respect that. If he just does one thing, he kind of does one thing really well. He's got one pitch, great. Once you figure out how to hit it, he's going to the minors. You know what I mean? To use a sports term. Sorry, I do that a lot. I leak. It's getting baseball season. I'm getting excited. But anyway, all right. Blah 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 blah. Let's take another break. Play another Silencer song. We were going to play Acquiesce. Speaking of Sean Reiner, what a good segue. It would have been better if I didn't call it that it was a segue.
No, it was scripted.
We didn't even script it. Amazing.
Nope. No, I swear we didn't script it. Nope. Just crumple up this piece of paper. Just ignore it.
Sure.
But here's a little Sean Reiner with Mr. Marcus here playing Acquiesce.
One shot to make them stronger. One shot to make them away. One shot to make them demons. One shot to make them saints. One shot to make them slaves. One shot to make them memories that will live on in infamy. We're the Dulcis Rise.
So that track was Acquiesce from Silencer with Sean Ryan on drums. And we have to shift gears now because I'm going to drum nerd out forever on that Silencer album. So just there'll be some information and links in show notes on how you can go see who's on it and where to buy it and where to listen to it and all that jazz. But time to move on to the newer things. We have more recent fish to fry with Marcus's career. He's in a little group called Forearm.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and kind of an interesting road as to how you got there. How you, I think you joined, and then you weren't in, and then you came back, and now you're like kind of got a different position, and kind of a neat story. So take it away with some Forearm stuff, because I actually don't know the whole story, and I'd like to make sure that I have all my details ironed out. So tell us.
For sure. Once again, I'm back on the internet, and it was after the Silencer album had come out, and I saw a Facebook post. The front man of Forearm at the time was like, "Hey, any lead guitar players out there want to start a band?" And I just smelled a ruse and sent the message, and I was just like, "Are you looking to really start a new band?" Because they had just come off of the U.S. tour. They're an Australian band, for those not familiar, and they had just done a U.S. tour with Testament, Overkill, and Flotsam and Jetsam. So
never heard of them.
Small little lineup, yeah.
Bah! And a few guys in Testament have been in other things too, but you know, hey. So I just kind of sent a message over and was like, you know, what's the deal with what you're asking for? And they needed a lead guy. So I shot them some tracks, we talked a little bit, and then I ended up doing a festival in Estonia with them. So for all of you that are fans of Encino Man with Pauly Shore, the jokes just never stopped.
Wow.
one and a half minute.
2 minutes. Now I have to give Pauly Shore a residual for this podcast. But
edit that.
Yeah, take that out. But so did the festival, and that went really well, and then, you know, kind of certain other things kind of came off the rails a little bit, and there were some issues. I had some health issues, and it just kind of like a perfect storm of shit kind of happened, and they ended up coming to the States the following fall, and they did the U.S. tour with the that one band, what's it called, Slayer. It was Slayer and Gojira.
I've heard of those bands, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe once in passing, but yeah. So they did that tour, and I'll stop being a smartass. But they did that tour.
It's lovely.
They did that tour, and then obviously I wasn't a part of that one. And afterwards, someone guided me to some press releases where it said that the frontman had left the band after that tour, and they had been planning on doing a new album when I was with them in Europe. That was all the talk, and I was even pre-proing, doing pre-production, like lead work and stuff like that. And so I reached back out to the guys and just said kind of like, hey, I know you had planned on doing an album. Are you still trying? You want to do that? Like, and I was really just kind of looking at more of like a guitar production kind of role. And then when they approached me and re-raised it and was like, all right, maybe would you want to front it? You know, my head kind of exploded for half a second just because of the, you know, anytime it's a new front man, that's always sketchy kind of territory with fans, and it's a very kind of touchy situation. You want to make sure you keep everything true to a previous sound, but you want to grow as a band, but you don't want to stray too far, because then if you experiment too greatly, it's going to land on your shoulders. You know, there's a lot of politics with the internet and music, and I mean, and then, you know, you can talk about Sabbath, you can talk about Anthrax,
Alice in Chains.
I mean, yeah, there's been plenty of kind of back and forth and changeovers, and people have had success with different vocalists and things of that sort. So I mean, you know, there's hope. It's never like a completely never do this type of thing. So we started kind of working on some stuff. Figured that it was going to work out to all of our liking. I mean, that's still kind of the ultimate thing that I tell people when they're like, oh, you know, why would you, you know, people kind of giving me a little, I've caught a little negative shit from a few people, and I'm just like, well, we wouldn't do it if we didn't think it made sense
right.
for the band's previous material and also for us, and just kind of moving it forward and everything. We use the same post-production was handled by Matt Hyde in the UK. He did their, he mixed the last album. So, you know, even down to the production, same crew involved. It was, you know, it wasn't just kind of like a complete abandonment of things. So
yeah, you didn't sign up to drive it into the ground or anything. Jeez.
No, no. I mean, that's I mean, no, actually, yes, that's my thing.
Oh, it was. Oh.
I joined bands to be the cancer and just ruin and destroy everything. And yeah. I love the negativity. But no, no, it came out. We feel it came out pretty well.
Cool.
I mean, there's some silencer-esque stuff there. Played some stuff for a friend of mine, and he was like, "Oh, that definitely sounds like you." So I mean, but it's still keeping within what was the previous framework. I knew the entire last album when we were doing the festival. The festival was like the entire album, so I knew every riff on it. I knew all the leads. So there was definitely coming from a place of I am familiar with the material, as opposed to sometimes guys kind of join up in bands and they haven't even heard one of the songs, let alone knew how to play it.
Right.
So there's, you know, a little bit, I'd like to think that after all the silencer stuff we were just talking about, I'd like to think that, you know, I'd have some kind of integrity with a few people that might think, okay, maybe he might be able to to keep it close enough for hand grenades. So it was pretty it's a pretty brutal experience, because you're trying to create something new, and anytime you're kind of doing something for a fan base or an audience, you got to keep it at least in the back of your mind. Like, you just can't, like you said, like, you're not there to drive it into the ground. You can't just come up with a complete different set of everything and be like, this is my time to do something experimental, and
we're gonna go in a grunge direction.
Mm-hmm, this is my new wave grunge crossover idea now, and so, you know, you pointed out, Trav, the silencer was 16 songs, 75 minutes. Caught all kinds of hell for that, because people were like, it's too long, it's taking too long to download,
oh my
god, you're ruining my life, you know, all that kind of fun
shit. You poor.
But after 6 years, you know, if it would have been, you know, 8 songs, 35, 40 minutes, even that would have seemed kind of like, it's been this many years, we kept piling some stuff on since we had the time. So with Forearm, the new Forearm album, which is called Survivalist, that is 8 songs. And I think that rings in at just over 50 minutes.
Wow.
Too long.
Yep. Oh, already heard it. Already heard it, man. You're late on that comment. Someone already did the math.
Take a ticket, Trav.
Broke out their accounting hat and was like, that's an average of 6 minutes a song.
Oh, my God.
That's not right. And so it was just kind of like, well,
not right.
And again, you know, the knee-jerk reaction is to be like, you know, Peace Sells, when there were cassettes and when there were, you know, we're talking about vinyl, we were on the right place to be talking about vinyl, A-sides and B-sides, every fucking album had technically 2 opening tracks, 2 closing tracks, because each side had like a closure point and an opening point. It wasn't the fluid all the way through, and I really missed that. And the eight songs, that was on purpose. It was still designed for, you know, people, vinyl are making a comeback, and if someone wants to somehow, if we can find a way to give them vinyl to purchase, I really love the design of there's an opener and a closer on both sides.
Nice.
That was completely done on purpose. The music in between, nothing was forced to make something one way or the other, you know, not very formulaic in that sense, where it's like, okay, you know, this has to happen next. So there are some longer songs on there, and that's kind of like I don't want to say it's an homage to what we grew up with as much as it's something that's familiar. Like, those are songs I used to play. Those are albums I could, you know, when I was a teenager, that I could just go start to finish all the way through. So it's not like it's long songs for the sake of being long. It's, you know, there's a little bit of the experience there with, that's just like familiar territory. It's what's comfortable. Comfortable is kind of the way that I would describe it. Like, it's not long, you know, because it's maybe it's like, what, 20 minutes shorter than the album that has twice as many songs on it. So that one, obviously, a lot more, you know. So we're hoping that it's much more of an experience. The lyrics are a little bit on the conceptual side. I won't go out and say it's like a concept album. It's not a King Diamond album completely storied from start to finish, but it's, you know, the flow, the lyrical matter ties in with, you know, the artist did a phenomenal job with the artwork.
That's kind of mortifying.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. But again, I mean, it's actually perfect for the subject matter, because the artist had all the lyrics. I don't even know if we had sent him the music, if he even asked for it, but he had all the lyrics for the entire album, and he had the title. And then we gave him a bunch of, I sent over some, you know, some 12 Monkeys-esque artwork, you know.
Oh, right on.
Still shots, you know, like Chernobyl, like after, like all that kind of, that was kind of where I was coming from. And obviously,
I like it because I've seen so many death metal album covers where it's like, dude, they're attempting to be scary cartoons. They're just like,
right, the gore.
All right, like I get it. Like, this dead thing is eating that dead thing's ass. Oh my god, that's how am I going to get to sleep tonight? But you see something like Survivalist, and because it's actually kind of has like I guess it qualifies as something that could actually happen.
Right. You know, for those that, you know, obviously, you know, we're not on television here, so we can't show you. So I'll just loosely describe it if you're not familiar.
We are on television, and I really wish you'd go put some clothes on. Seriously, it's getting uncomfortable.
Don't you hate pants? It's not a commercial aircraft. I know this was a year. It's been a year and a half for planes. So when I saw the lone figure standing at the downed aircraft, the initial, and again, I couldn't even enjoy the very first look at the artwork for an album I spent a year working on, because as soon as I saw it, the first thing that came to mind was like, oh, fucking hell, someone's going to be so pissed, like, that we're somehow offensive, like, that this was done as like a, it's like somehow as like an insult, and it's not like, oh yeah, it's a plane that crashed. Right. Like that's
nope. Right.
In fact, anyone that's thinking that, don't even bother listening to the album.
Yeah, just go away. Yeah.
Because if you can't kind of see through it that it's a piece of art, number one, and number two, that like I didn't commission downed aircraft, number two, like I, you know, it's still the artist's interpretation of what he read and the subject matter, the title, you know, the fact that it is kind of correlating to that, obviously, yeah, it's dark. It manages to almost be darker than if it was just a pile of skulls and, you know, like, you know, one dude devouring another dude and all that kind of stuff you pointed out.
Enough with that stuff, for crying out loud. It's like the same fascination that 5-year-olds have with poop. You know what I mean? After a while, it's like, this is just silly. Seriously, like, so, stop it. I, you know, like, scare me. Do something scary. Don't pile of skulls. I'm not going to run into a pile of skulls. It's just not going to happen. You know, I don't know. That's just my opinion.
And the timing, we weren't really paying attention. We just wanted to kind of keep the people have been asking. It's been a while. We've been working on the album for a while. So when we put it out, we released the artwork, and one of the first sites that covered it released all the track listing, the times, the title, and didn't post the artwork, because it was right around the period where that most recent, there's the dash cam footage of the plane coming over the bridge.
And
all that. Like, it was like right at the same point, and I was like, you know, I don't think that it's, you know, I didn't know if it was going to be perceived that way. Everybody else kind of landed it and ran the story like the following day. And everyone, the artwork was there, and it was what it was. So it wasn't done like on purpose to be, you know, controversial or anything like that.
Right,
but
right.
It was weird. It almost kind of felt like a censorship kind of thing, where I was like, is this really, like, is that really going to be perceived as like an insult, like a slight, like we've been planning this. Like, do they think that we just did, like we just pulled the image from the internet that day
and right, sent it over? Right, right.
Wait, run this.
You were waiting for a plane to crash and now, send it now.
Yeah, and really, but okay, the planes, you know, it was like the plane in Ukraine. That was a very militant kind atmosphere. You know, it's the Cold War again kind of thing, you know? Like, hey, remember that? Remember when everyone was scared shitless about nuclear weapons and all this kind of stuff? Right. And you got Putin banging on his chest a little bit. And, you know, and you're kind of like, okay, what's the West going to do? You know, it's very political. I mean, politics are something that I kind of don't really openly engage in because, you know, why would you? But, you know, it's that's the...
That's what you have family for.
that's what Thanksgiving is for.
Yeah.
but yeah. So I mean, like, there's definitely, you know, some, you know, lyrical stuff. I mean, if anyone paid any attention to the Silencer stuff, there's some very politically themed kind of things and a little bit of ambiguity there. So it's always nice to see a couple different people take the same song and interpret it three different ways and have none of them be correct, but also just the fact that people can take it and see it and think and have it relate to them in some way, shape, or form, whether it's positive or negative. And the same thing with the album cover. Coupled, the day the album cover came out, I was doing another interview, and the guy was like, between the track titles and the cover, I'm interested. And that was just kind of an interesting kind of response. But nice. At the same time, it was, you know, I was like, oh, how could you? I mean, of course, that's awesome. But, you know, you'd like for that to happen. But when it comes to, you know, artwork, and that's the other thing. The artwork is representing a completely different subset of art that, you know, will be put under a microscope and dissected by guitar players, by drummers, by audiophiles, by you know, like everything's going to keep coming down. And there's always that, like, okay, like there will be certain people that take it from a technical standpoint. And I really like that other people, you know, could kind of maybe try to take it from the, what do the lyrics mean? What do you mean by this?
Yeah.
Do you mean anything by this? Like, I don't just kind of, you know, I probably worked just as hard on the lyrics as I did on the riffs, as I did on everything else. You know, it was a very kind of nothing done. Like, I wouldn't say it, especially, again, like, okay, don't run the artwork. I'm not going to say anything that I'm not going to be able to back up. Like, it's not going to be that kind of, like, what did you mean by that? That's, you know, we were discussing briefly, could SOD come out with that album today with the lyrical matter and everything else? Like, they just did I think it was LA Weekly just did was it a super group thing or a hardcore thrash kind of thing? But there was like another list of lists that, you know, people can click on. And SOD was listed, and even it's however many years later, and they still had to like go out of their way while describing the band. Didn't matter that they're saying, like, hey, it's, you know, it's Scott and Charlie from Anthrax and Dan Locher from, you know, from Nuclear and all that. Like, they still had to go out of their way and let you know, supposedly. I think it was even, like, kind of speculated, but it was like, the band says everything's tongue-in-cheek and not meant to be taken seriously. Like,
right.
Are you going to discover that album now? A million units plus later, you know, 25 years later? And,
sure.
And then find a way to be like...
offended.
You know, suddenly you're in the middle of a Bill Burr routine. Like, yeah, I totally believe it.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to comment on the artwork. You said how different people interpret lyrics or interpret, you know, it's kind of fun to hear three different people say three different things and none of them are right. In staring at the artwork for Survivalist, I actually did a little like self. Yeah, I kind of took a minute to think, what would I do, like, if that was me, and I woke up and it was just me and the plane and no one else, I'd die. I'm not prepared for that. I'm not that guy. I'm not the guy that's like, okay, I know how to build a fire, and if that thing attacks me, I'll kill it and stab it and make meat. Nope. Pretty sure I wouldn't make it. So I actually kind of took a little trip on the artwork where I was like, instead of seeing another crucifix covered in blood and black motor oil and demons and everything, whatever, I actually saw the survivalist cover and was kind of like, ugh, man, like, damn, he, dude's up a crick, isn't he? You know what I mean? So take that for what it's worth. It did grab my attention.
And thank you for, you know, just, you know, an honest, open reflection of, you know, what you saw. And even still, like, do I traditionally mean survivalist in the Randy Blythe, like, live off the grid? Are you capable of doing these things? You know, because I'm pretty sure when he was online, that was like a big thing he was talking about. Like, he was able to,
okay,
you know, he was like, I know how to do this. Can you survive? Like, there was a lot of right. That kind of stuff. And traditionally, yes, I think that's like what the actual definition, you know, the accepted definition means, that, you know, someone that can like that sense of survivalist. And you're taking it as like, yeah, like you're the one guy standing out in the middle of this like post-apocalyptic world in this landscape where like there's nothing around you. There's no food to be had. There's no trees. Everything just looks destroyed and obliterated. Is that even necessarily the sense of what, like, could it mean something, you know, just as simple as like within your own life, your own challenges? And, you know, like, you know, someone pointed out, they're like, oh, that's an appropriate title for a band going through lineup changes and having all this and stuff like that. And you're just kind of like, yeah, like, but again, would I name the album, like, would that really, is that, yes, the entire, every song I sing about being a new frontman and how it's trying on my nerves. You know, I mean, you know, is you just kind
of. For 50 minutes? That's too long.
Yep. That's what my therapist said too, but, you know. He still got paid, but yeah, I don't want to make it seem like I try to make things ambiguous on purpose and to like lead people astray and like try to confuse people, but there's always something. And, you know, I mean, the lyric video that we did for Acquiesce when Silencer came out, nobody really seemed to pay any attention. And the entire thing is nothing but images about the Kennedy assassination, down to implicating photos of like, this person said to be involved. Who is this? Why am I showing you a picture of this guy? Like, why is like? There's always something else kind of going on there, and you know, sometimes things just kind of slip, and people are like, hey, that's a cool song, or I like that riff, or I don't understand what this is about. You know, that's a big word. It was nice to catch people off guard. You know, it wasn't the typical kind of, oh, this is brutal, you know, it looks bloody, or, you know, I love those covers from back in the day, and I can't help but feel like anything now that looks like, how much of that's being deliberate? Like, to look at somebody and be like, make this cover look like it came from 1987. You know, like, that just feels just as forced as, you know, I got a text from a buddy of mine right after it came out, and he was like, well, that's depressing as fuck to look at. And I was like, I know, isn't it? It's like excited. I was like, yeah, it's super dark. I didn't expect it either, but hey, you know, cool. So it was a kind of a nice wrap up to the entire process, which, you know, self-discovery and, woo, you know, getting to know yourself. And I'm glad that's awesome. That just made my night that you said you looked at it and actually like, put yourself in that lone figure shoes, like, holy fuck, what if that did happen? Like, what if that was me? What would I do? You know, like, I mean, a fun one would be, what if cell phones stop working tomorrow? What if the internet just stopped? What if the internet went away and everyone had to go back to pre-internet living?
Well, I kind of saw that during the holidays. A friend of mine, he bought a PlayStation, and because he was like, oh, I'm on break from school, I just want to veg out. And but the PlayStation Network was down.
Yep.
I remember that.
So I'm like, well, yeah, but dude, you have a game, can't you just play it? No, like it has to be connected to the network to be able to play it. Like, are you kidding? And I think about that, like you saying the internet being down. What happens when Spotify goes down? One of these days, or Pandora. Like, how many people have made that like the cornerstone of their music listening existence? What happens when that goes away?
Well, you might roll back car accidents by about 10% from people playing DJ on their phone in their car.
Yeah, but, there you go. That's true.
But yeah, you know, there's you're bringing up, and, you know, all right, I don't know how many people from, like, is Taylor Swift going to get the same Lars Ulrich treatment now? Because she said that she didn't want to, what was it, Spotify? Was that the one that Taylor Swift pulled her music from? And,
yeah.
And it was kind of like a big deal for 5 minutes, and everyone was just kind of like,
boy, she's, you know, a hero. Like, she's a hero now.
But you know what? I still see my entire, like, I still see Facebook just auto-posting for people, like, just listen to this track on Spotify. And I'm like, it's the same person that was just like, oh, wow, she pulled her music. Good for her. Still goes right back to it. You know, there's that, it's the e-addictions, all the electronic stuff that's just like, you know, the meme that was making its rounds for a while there was, go out to eat. Everyone puts their phone in the middle of the table. God, first person to grab it pays or something. And it's like, that's novel, but that's also just kind of like, oh my God, is it really that bad?
This is another good segue, because one of the cornerstones that we tried to build this podcast on is vinyl records. And not that I'm the biggest vinyl collector out there, but there's something about having a tangible copy of the album. There's something about coming down into one spot. I can't carry that thing around with me. I can't load it into my phone. It's I have it over there. I'm pointing at it. You can't see it because, like you said, we're not on TV. But that's the spot that I have to listen to albums, and I have to look at the artwork, my square foot of artwork while I'm playing it. And
well, can
that's
kind of
like the.
I'm going to ask you two guys. I'm going to ask you guys a question about this, and this was like a theory I kind of generated, and I want to just kind of hear your take on it since we're talking about this, and you know, we're all looking for more of that tangibleness that is now gone.
I don't know who you think you are, just hijacking the podcast.
Oh my goodness.
Let me put you in the hot seat now.
Dun dun dun.
And let me ask, I think that, you know, you talking about Pandora, Spotify, and even just kind of MP3s, iTunes, the computer. Everybody listens, like, everyone hears something. I mean, obviously with vinyl you have to take it to the player. So it's not quite as the cassette goes into the car after you buy it. The CD, right, you come out of the store, right, you put it in the car. But I've been kind of mulling over, could music kind of be having this devalued, it's a weird kind of collection. Everyone likes to have the collection on the drive, but they can't possibly listen to all of it anyway. But everyone's hearing everything new in the exact same spot that they've heard everything new. Every time you hear something for the first time, you are in the same computer chair in the same room, and you're not driving to go get it. You didn't encounter someone at the store. You weren't having a bad day, and you went to go get it. You put it in the car. You drove. You know, like,
you're,
it just seems
experience.
It
you're
seems like
experience with it.
I mean, how many times could you hear a song that takes you back and you go, first time I heard this was at this guy's house, or we were in the car and it came on the radio, or we were out and we picked up this album and we didn't even know it came out, and we grabbed it at the store, put it on the car, we drove around. Now it's just kind of like, yeah, I downloaded it.
Yeah. is the question, are people not being able to connect experiences with the music anymore? I mean, hell yeah. Is there more than 100% yes that I can? I mean, yeah, I completely agree. That's the thing. And like, when a band puts out a limited run of 300, and there's 300 of those, that's I have number 152. That I have that one. This one, not everyone, you know, this one is mine. However that line goes about the rifle, I forget. But this is my copy. I have this one. I remember going online and ordering it from Profound Lore Records or something. You know what I mean? Like it all gets connected with that. Whereas the digital one that I loaded into my phone, I probably just hit download somewhere in between. I don't remember. It's just in here now. I have this now, and there's just another one. And then you bought one, and there's another one, and there's always going to be another one because it's not real. It's digital file. It's always going to be downloadable. I completely agree with that. I have about 150 records. Not a huge collection, but I can go through and probably tell you kind of a small story to, oh my God, I remember every minute of it, for all of them. Not exaggerating. And I know there's people out there with 2,000 records that can do that.
Yep. I remember recently, this past Record Store Day, Black Friday. I'm not a huge vinyl person, just because I basically live out of a bag and have been couch surfing since 2010. But still, I like to try to connect with music when I can. And I was in a position, Record Store Day, this past Black Friday, New Faith No More. And that 7-inch single came out, Motherfucker. And I think it was online first where someone was streaming. I was like, no, I love Faith No More. I'm not going to listen. Not going to listen. Because, again, the idea of listening to new music online is, you know, it's on all the same music blogs or this or that. Like, you're listening to the same new track on the same screen where you read about, oh, some band member farted. Whatever. Who cares? Like
23 hottest bass players' daughters. Click, 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 click,
right.
Click,
click. So I remember going down to the Main Street Jukebox, Stroudsburg, PA. Like, I walked in there and I bought it. Like, there it was. And, you know, the guy behind the counter, I've known him since he opened that record store the year I graduated high school in 1994. And he said to me, he's like, dude, I knew you'd come in and get this. Like, what? Like, that's my story. Yeah, that one right record. Off. Like, now, there's been music I've listened to and purchased online since then.
Right.
But I don't have any cool stories. Like, none of it connects, you know, but, like, I'll always listen to that song and basically remember that day. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that
Marcus, I'll tell you one more story. You ever hear of the band Torch?
Yeah, you just had somebody on, didn't you?
Well, yeah, he's gonna be on. Well, he's going to be on this Sunday, but by the time people hear this podcast, he will have been on last Sunday. That was kind of meta for it's those like, of for everyone whose heads hasn't exploded.
It's time yet. Travel.
I'll finish my story.
Time travel.
Torch's new album just came out. My buddy Zach ordered 4 copies of it, and we all paid him. So, you know, it was all one order because we planned. All the records came to his house. He's got a killer system. We are all going to have a listening party at his house. We're all going to get our albums that night. We're going to open them up. Oh, look at you know what I mean? I got the glow-in-the-dark one. I got the... like a bunch of dorks. We made a commitment to each other. We, like, pinky swore over the phone. All the streaming stuff, they've been dropping one song a day, and I think the entire album just came out.
Yeah, it's all out now.
Yesterday, it's all out now. Yeah. We made a commitment to each other not to listen to any of it. We're going to experience the album together in his house, sucking on a beer. There you go. There's a story. When's the last time you did that digitally?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's just, yeah. I mean, there you go. It's an experience just as much as seeing a band live.
Yeah.
Is an experience, and you know, I have stuff on iTunes. I don't have, like you said, like, I can't really tell you I've got any interesting stories about what may have compelled outside of like a browsing type of thing. And, you know, you're just kind of flipping through from artist to artist, jumping around. And another interesting point that I noticed off of such things off of iTunes is that they give you the genres, and it just kind of highlights just how much genre titles are pretty much fucking pointless because... Good Lord, like, after looking through some of them, I was just kind of like, nobody can agree, let's just leave it at that. You know, like, as far as, like, arguing over, this is a thrash band, well, maybe it was in 1987. it's not today. You know, like, you know, and it just kind of going through the sort of how that even has become a, you know, the experience has been removed a little bit, if at the very least a little bit, and... Then at the same time, the critical nature of what is okay, what isn't okay. Does this fit the mold? Does that not fit the mold? Is this too comfortable? Not comfortable enough? Like it seems like the criticisms have escalated greatly since everyone now feels they have the platform. Because if you just saw somebody back in high school, it was like, I had a Slayer patch on my bag and a bunch of other Slayer patches and shit, and everybody was, you know, different bands, and, you know, someone would come up and be like, oh, I like Slayer too. What album you like? Seasons. Ah, I like South of Heaven. Cool, man. See you next week. It wasn't that kind of like, well, what album?
What era?
It didn't turn into like this escalated pissing match down to the album, to the song, to the specific soul. Like, it just seems so compartmentalized with...
That was Slayer after Kerry shaved his head. They sucked then. Oh, shut up, dude. Like, who even pays attention to that stuff?
Oh, quite a few people.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, maybe you're following the wrong people, man.
You need to hit up some forums, dude.
No. Stay away.
Please.
Well, that was the podcast that you had turned me on to, Seth, when it was Duff McKagan on Jamie Josta's, and yeah. it's McKagan telling the story of losing sleep at night as a 40-year-old post Guns N' Roses, like King of the World, he's in Velvet Revolver.
Yeah.
There's a dude on the message boards when message boards were a newer kind of thing, turn of the millennium and all that. And then he meets the dude in person and it's like, wait, you're 17?
It's a kid. And
he's just like, the fuck was I doing with my life? Like, yep. Why? like he just completely just tossed it all out. Like, okay, there's no point.
Didn't the kid even admit, like, yeah, this is kind of my hobby. I like to go on forums and work
people up.
Just yeah. upset people. Yeah. He got under Duff McKagan's skin. But, you know, Duff said, lesson learned. And when he says something like that, I believe him. I haven't looked at one of those things since.
Yep.
So, lesson learned.
Well, and you know, I mean, he does kind of have the perk of not having to.
Totally.
When you're, I think we, you know, it's the use your illusions. Do they happen with downloading? Does that happen after Appetite? If you download and pillage Appetite, do you even get those two albums? Does Kill 'Em All eventually lead to Puppets and Justice? Like, all of that kind of stuff. Like, if you had that, the luxury of being around before the net really started to sink in, now you almost kind of still, like, record labels, what are your social media numbers? Yes. How many likes do you have? How many followers do you have? Do you engage? Do you readily engage? Yeah. Like, there's all of that kind of, it's, you have to connect one-on-one with almost everyone. I mean,
if you want us to if you want us to make you famous, you kind of have to be famous already. Come back to us then. What the hell is the point of me talking to you then? No, I just want something to be honest again and have like the story behind it. Like, just hearing their survivalist artwork stuff is kind of intriguing. I think anybody who listens to that is at least going to go. They're at least going to type Forearm Survivalist into Google and then switch it over to images and at least look at the picture, and they might go, it's stupid, looks like Lost, and then hang up and never pay attention to it again. Hey, they looked, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know what, and that's the funny thing is that they're going to go look and someone else is going to get click revenue and it's not going to be me.
That's true.
But yeah, so, Black Vinyl Collective.
Yeah, dude, thanks again for taking the time. Always insightful, and again, you know, always value your opinions on this stuff. I mean, you're a person that's been there and played with, you know, amazing people, write great music, and so we really appreciate you taking the time, man.
We'll have a bunch of links in the show notes too. Make sure you follow Marcus on Twitter.
Yep.
At Johansson Shreds.
Right? Yes, Johansson. Yeah, that's everything across the internet is johanssonshreds.com. And I'm pretty sure that's where all of my my backslashes are on Facebook and Twitter and
on the social medias
and all the
cool, that makes it easy to find. We'll click all that in there. We'll put all that in notes.
Well, cool, man.
But thank you for having me on and for letting me ramble on. I really appreciate your time as well, and really appreciate the kind words and, you know, everything. It's always a pleasure talking.
Absolutely,
to you.
Absolutely, man. So Travis, take us out, huh?
Okay. Staying true with the vinyl vinyl stuff, I bought a Modest Mouse new record on their
website,
their label Glacial Pace.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's it. And
look at it.
Yep, I got the new album on its way to the house, and I am going to play. We have to start this whole segment over because I completely forgot what the name of the album is.
No, we don't. Play the song, and there it is. Goodbye. Have a good night, everyone.
See you later.
The title's in the show notes.
Modest Silencer, Forearm Mouse.
That'll do. That's perfect.
All right, guys. Take care. Thank you very much, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
Yeah, later, man. So much. All right. Bye.
Good night.